is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer, bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
All right, here we go. Another episode of the PT Pintcast starts right now. Some of the best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. Today on the show, a native of Syracuse, New York, so he knows something about hills and cold. Got his bachelor's degree in biology from Geneseo State University, and then he returned to Syracuse getting his DPT from Upstate Medical University. He continued his training with sports physical therapy residency at Texas Health Resource Ben Hogan Sports Medicine, working with the TCU Athletics. Along with playing baseball most of his life, he began treating high school, college, and professional baseball players during residency and training under the former Texas Rangers team physician. Following residency, he furthered his training with an upper extremity athlete and baseball fellowship through Proaxis Therapy and the Kansas City Royals. He is currently the minor league physical therapist for the Chicago White Sox. On the PT Pintcast right now is Sean Bardenat. Sean, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jimmy. Glad to be here. I appreciate your time.
Hardest question always comes up batting leadoff, and what are we drinking tonight?
We are drinking a 312, which is a local Chicago beer.
Yeah. I've had a couple of those. I'm trying to do local. Davidson Brothers Brewing Company, they're out of Glens Falls. I am doing their red ale. Want to thank you for coming on the show, man. I know you're on a break right now too.
Yeah, I've just been the off season here, so a little bit of time to catch up on continuing ed and a little bit of travel, see the family while you can before the craziness starts back up. That is spring training coming up soon here.
I mean, you got 162 games in a year. How short is the off season in Major League Baseball?
It is pretty short, especially when you're on the rehab side. You know, they tend to keep some guys around throughout the winter, so you're kind of on call, and I go in most days of the week, but it's definitely a lighter schedule that, like I said, allows you to catch up on some of the things you wanted to do in terms of Con Ed and things like that that you couldn't really pull off during the season. It's a really good time. I'm enjoying it, kind of regenerating.
Well, since you brought it up, what sort of Con Ed things are you jumping into while you have some time?
I just took dry needling coming from Oklahoma City with Sue Felsoni this past weekend.
Yeah.
I would really encourage anyone out there. It was an awesome class. Definitely will change the way you practice come Monday morning, which is, I think, really valuable. I'm doing some IAOM, working towards my orthopedic manual therapy certification. So I've done a couple of spine there. I took the SFMA back when I was a student, but I'm going to audit it. They give you a really cool opportunity. I'm not sure, some people might not know about with them, is if you take the course, you're allowed to audit it whenever they come to your city for free. So I feel like I can never get enough of that stuff. I'm going to sit in on that at the end of January with a bunch of the other White Sox guys.
That is really cool.
Yeah, so I'm excited. It's been good.
So when you were in PT school, we have a friend in common, which is John DeNoyles, who was on a previous episode. You went to PT school with John at SUNY Upstate. Did you know baseball was going to be in your future when you're in PT school? Is that your goal?
I knew professional or college sports was going to be in my future, quite honestly. I really liked baseball. Towards some of the end of my clinicals, I got pretty heavy into the shoulder, trained under a resident-trained manual therapist and a guy who specialized in shoulder. And that's when I kind of realized, okay, this is awful challenging. Very mobile joint, a lot going on. I love the sports aspect, getting into the biomechanics of baseball too. It was kind of really exciting for me as a student to see all the possibilities with it. And I chose residency a little bit based off of the opportunities down there in Fort Worth, Texas. We saw 50 to 60 UCLs that year.
Wow.
Our doctor sees a lot of them. So I had a really good opportunity to see pro guys, college guys, work with TCU baseball. They had a little run to Omaha, the World Series there. So just being a part of all that, I was really hooked and excited about it. And I guess they say the rest is history, right?
Yeah. So how long have you been with the minor league White Sox right now?
I just started in September. I was with the Royals up until September. They were winning a little bit too much, so I had to get out of there and head up to Chicago. But
that's got to be rough, huh? When they start winning all those games and the big one too at the end?
No, there was a great group of people over there. I was pulling for them big time and really fortunate for the opportunity. It came open with Chicago, so I was excited to move over there and get going with these guys. Another great group as well, so I have a lot to learn from them, and I'm excited for the opportunity, definitely.
Cool. So whenever I ask this particular question and I phrase it this way, I always get the answer, well, there's no typical day. But run us through what types of things can be typical in terms of, you know, PT in Major League Baseball with pro ball players.
Yeah, good question. It's pretty dependent on the time of the year based off of, are you in season? Are you in spring training, extended spring training? There's so many leagues going on, and I'm out at the spring training facility in Arizona. So spring training, typical day, you're there awful early and you're there awful late. So yeah. I won't go into the details of that. It's pretty crazy. But on average, you know, once the season gets going, you're in there kind of normal time, six, seven in the morning. Your rehab guys are coming in. You all eat breakfast together, kind of the team atmosphere. You get guys going, run them through treatments. Our goal is to make these guys feel like baseball players as soon as possible. So getting them out on the field, being involved with their team, running through drills, whether it be limited participation, and really close communication with the coaching staff, as well as with the strength and conditioning staff, running them through lifts, things like that, and then kind of finishing off with what you've wanted to accomplish in terms of the rehab. So it's kind of a drawn out day of rehab. It's not just, oh, you have a patient at 9, a patient at 10. It's they all show up. You got to manage them. Might be 10, 15 guys all at once. Let's send some out to the field, to the gym, in here doing rehab stuff. It's really pretty variable, but it definitely keeps you on your toes and keeps you excited and engaged. It's a lot going on.
Yeah, it sounds cool. I mean, you've got a lot more players. We talked to the Lakers head PT, Julie Cito, and just with baseball, just the number of players, are you with a particular subset? Are you working with infielders, outfielders, pitchers? Is it broken up like that at all?
Well, for me, anytime someone is at an affiliate, whether it be, you know, rookie ball, high A, single A, double A, triple A, et cetera, and they get hurt for a prolonged amount of time, they come to the spring training facility, at least in the last two organizations I've been in. So they're there, whether it be a pitcher, infielder, outfielder, as long as it's a significant enough injury that requires them to be down for, you know, say more than a couple weeks, they're going to be there. So you may have a wide variety of position players, pitchers. I would say predominantly pitchers. See a lot of shoulders and elbows and things like that, but we get a lot of position guys with hamstrings, lower extremity, stuff like that. So I'm getting really comfortable with shoulders and elbows, but I definitely see a lot of backs, a lot of hamstrings, some knees, things like that. So it's a really diverse caseload. I was a little worried about, you know, kind of becoming a little bit too niche too quickly. I think I was definitely wrong in terms of that. I can think of five guys I have right now. None of them have the same thing going on. So an ankle, a knee, a back, a shoulder. Yeah, it's definitely kind of all over the place, which is good. It keeps it fresh and keeps you challenged.
A PT for Major League Baseball, do you travel with the team? Do you stay at a rehab location? Because I imagine, especially with a grueling schedule like Major League Baseball, somebody's always down and somebody's always rehabbing, and that's somewhere else.
So as the minor league physical therapist, I'm stationed at our spring training facility, which is in Phoenix, Arizona. We also have a major league physical therapist, really, really sharp guy who I've trying to learn as much as I can from. He travels with the team. And, okay, you know, that's my goal eventually. Hopefully I'll get there kind of like everyone else. You put in your time through the minors. We're all trying to work our way up. And ideally, that's what I want to be doing as soon as possible. Then I'll be on the road with the team for, like you talked about, a very long, grueling schedule. But yeah, for now, they kind of come to me when they're hurt for a long enough period of time. And I stay placed right out in Arizona.
That's got to be a rough gig living out in Arizona all year, huh? The weather must be brutal.
Tell you what, this time of the year, I didn't want to come back to Sarah. Don't tell my family that, but the weather is perfect. You earn it during the summer. 120 is pretty hot, whether it's dry or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, this time of the year is really, really nice.
That's not bad. That's not bad weather right there. So with these athletes, their body is essentially, it's their work equipment. So is a big part of your job making sure they know how to properly operate that equipment and empower them to learn their own body? Is education still a big part of your job as a PT?
Yeah, I think you nailed it with the word empower there. This is their living. They have families. So getting to know these guys, you find what drives them and makes them tick. And a lot of these guys, this is it. You know, they've made it to the highest level and they're really willing to do whatever it takes to stay there and to hopefully advance and move up like we all want to do. That being said, an injury, especially a serious one, whether it be a surgery or you're down for a long time, that's a horrible thing to happen to an athlete when that's your career, that's your moneymaker. But my goal is really to make it as positive an experience as I can. The rehab being not just about getting better, but getting better than you were, because obviously that wasn't good enough. Something broke down. So my goal is to, yes, treat the joint, but also at some point screen their entire body, let them know, this is what I've found, put them in challenging positions where they realize, wow, I need to work on that. I mean, I've had some guys who can squat the house, but then you put them in a single leg position and it looks like if you sneeze, they would fall over. So that's right. Really, really powerful. These guys seeing, okay, there's value to this and telling them that, you know what, you have a great foundation, but we can improve you if we work on these things. And my ultimate goal is to get these guys a routine that every day they come in, they know, oh, I have a tight hip. I have my T-spine is limited. My specific things for me that I need to work on. And as I've worked with some older veterans, these guys get there early. They stay late. The really good ones that hang around for a long time, you know, 10, 15 year careers. Those guys are so dedicated to themselves. Like I said, they're the first ones there just doing their specific things, addressing their impairments. And I think it's our job to empower them to know, listen, this is your body. These are the things that you have to do to stay on the field. And I think a lot of them appreciate that. And just developing that routine is one of my biggest goals with them coming out of rehab going forward.
That's cool. And you've also got the CSCS. Not that we're big on titles, but it just shows that that's where your mindset is. And you're also an SCS. So are you designing their entire rehab protocol? Are you running through it or both?
Well, in terms of the strength and conditioning staff, I work pretty closely with them. I'm really lucky to have some really talented guys and girls that we work with that you say, hey, listen, this is his precautions. Otherwise, I want you to work them. Just be cautious of this. And they can be really creative around those boundaries. So in terms of the rehab, I work really closely with our athletic trainers, kind of all of us working as a team to, okay, let's do this in rehab. Let's get them out in the field and do that. And kind of all of our specialty areas, it really comes together nicely. So it's an awesome team environment. It's, you know, as an athlete, you grew up being a part of a team. And now I feel like I'm still a part of that, which is really cool. And I'm enjoying it a lot.
I mean, that just sounds fun, especially if that's your passion. Then going to work really isn't necessarily going to work. It's going to work out. It's going to have fun. It's going to play. It's a sport. I mean, it should be fun. If it's not, something's going wrong.
Exactly. And you know, you're there so many hours that it's got to be fun, because at some point it's kind of your life. And I'm still struggling a little bit to find that balance. But you know, loving the people you work with and loving what you do does make it fun, and just being passionate about it.
That's cool. So these guys are expensive athletes. These guys are multi-million dollar assets to their team. Rehabbing them is very, very important. But how about on the flip side, in terms of how do we as PTs prevent those athletes from getting hurt? I mean, we'd love to be able to bring people in, much like the model that Shirley Sarman says, which is essentially you see a dentist a couple times a year, you should be seeing a PT a couple times a year. How much of a role do you have in terms of physical therapy getting to prevent the injuries? Because these guys are going as hard as they can, and they need to hit the ball and throw the ball and field the ball as best as they can. So how much does PT have influence on making sure they don't get hurt?
That's a really good point. And I love the way Shirley talks about that, the movement specialist, and hopefully someday us having that role. I think that's huge if we could do those checkups. And that's something that I'm really passionate about in baseball is, you know, I've always wanted to develop this screen. I always thought if I could come up with these itemized things, I could predict injury. And as I get a little bit older and some more experience, I'm realizing it's not necessarily black and white, check yes, check no. It's more of looking at a bunch of things, looking at his history, looking at the stresses going on in his life, the sleep, all these things, in addition to the range of motion, their flexibility, stability, control. And I've worked closely with our athletic trainers. We're actually putting together some kind of cool data collection things that we're going to try to start implementing in terms of preseason screening, looking at these guys, who's staying healthy, who's breaking down, and then going back and analyzing kind of the trend. Definitely pulling a lot of the research. We have some established norms out there that we pay pretty close attention to and look for, but also trying to find our own. We're heavily involved with that, as preventing as many injuries as we can. As like you said, these guys are worth a lot of money. And I think us as practitioners, we have to rise to the occasion to keep them out there, because that's our job. And ultimately, to be successful, when those two things come together, I think that's when a team can really do pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, if you can keep your first line guys on the field for a couple extra games, you're going to get a couple extra runs out of that. And a couple extra runs means a couple extra wins. And that puts you in a better position for hopefully getting into and having a good position in the playoffs. So it's almost like Moneyball in terms of how do I just keep those great players on the field a little bit longer and a little bit
Absolutely.
Heavier? Because again, these guys are worth money, lots of money.
Yeah, and I think there's a really, really big shift in professional sports, at least baseball, towards that. We're starting to see a lot of these teams kind of adopt the European, Australian model of this sports science and these performance specialists, and bringing some of them over, which is really cool. I think they're really advanced and a little bit ahead of the curve. You look at some of these Australian rugby teams and football clubs over in Europe, and they're actually starting to put a salary cap on the medical staff in terms of how much they can pay them. I heard a really great talk at the winter meetings this year by a guy at Nike, and he hit on some of these points, so I have to give him some credit. You're investing $200 million, say, in your club, and you're not investing in the people who are treating them. It's kind of like you saving your entire life for a 401k, but then finding the cheapest broker you can, and you know, maybe giving him the fanciest calculator or the fanciest computer, which is some of this sports science technology gadgets, but not really investing in quality clinicians to keep them out there. So I think us investing in ourselves, our continuing ed, that's going to be more powerful than any fancy gadget you can have, because ultimately we're the ones who are seeing these guys, getting our hands on them on a daily basis. So I think investing in yourself is huge. And I'll probably sound like a broken record repeating that again and again, but I can't say it enough. Whether it's going on to residency, fellowship, or even just taking a position that you're in a challenging environment where people want to learn, I think that's probably the best thing you can do, because ultimately to be successful, it comes down to you challenging yourself and conveying that on whoever you're treating.
Absolutely. Yeah. I get fed a really, really good dose of Ohio State Buckeyes inspiration and knowledge because my roommate, David, is a Buckeye, another PT student. And I think it was Jim Tressel in his book was saying how you put winners on the field, you're going to win. And that's top down. That's the players. And it's got to be the staff behind them, the guy serving them their meals and the guy making sure that their equipment's okay. You do that top down, you're going to get a better result out of your players. And that's how you win. You win from the top down.
Yeah. Everyone on deck and just that positive environment all around. I think when you start to see those things building, it's really exciting to be a part of. And I got a little dose of that with Kansas City, and I'm excited. Chicago, hopefully we can get things going over there as well. And that whole culture, I think culture is the best word for it. It comes from the top all the way to the bottom and everyone in between.
So you're from a weird part in New York because you're not necessarily from an area where it's either Yankees or Mets. So where does your allegiance actually lie? Where did your allegiance lie when you were growing up?
I guess I got to be careful answering these questions now, but I actually grew up an Atlanta Braves fan. Yeah, I was a center fielder, and Andrew Jones, Chipper Jones, to be honest, they were pretty easy to like in the 90s with that streak and on TBS, really accessible. And I just hooked on them from a young age, and that was my team. But now it's whoever signs the paycheck, absolutely. And
But I mean, I talked about this with Judy Cito of the Lakers again, bringing her up again, because she had kind of the same mindset as you, is I'm on this team now. You know, Judy doesn't see herself as a Lakers PT. She sees herself as a Laker and part of that team aspect. I think it's cool that you had mentioned earlier, you're part of that team and having the meals with those guys, and that's the way it goes. You're now part of that organization.
That's really one of my favorite parts of it is, like I said, been on a team my whole life, just continuing to be on one. I put on that logo every day in the locker room, and I spend as much time there as everyone else, and we're really all just so invested in your work. So it's cool to see the guys at the top level perform, because, you know, even down in the minor leagues, we're helping contribute to that, and someday we hope to be there. So it's definitely, the team atmosphere is awesome.
So you brought up like a pre-screen and saying how it was kind of always in the back of your mind to work on one, and saying the longer you went, the more you realized the more information had to go into it. Didn't you publish some research on it, trying to develop your own?
Yeah, you mentioned John Denoyles. He, myself, and another classmate of ours, we were in PT school, and we were really big into FMS, SFMA, reading about it. I mean, you read that movement book and what Greg Cook and those guys have to say, and it's like, holy cow, there's something to this. Amazing stuff. And we really latched onto it, and there wasn't a lot at that time at the high school level, so I think we got close to 200 athletes at a local high school. Ended up screening them. We got our certifications, ended up screening them all preseason, tracked them, and put together a paper that finally just got published. As you know, research is, that is a work in process. It makes you really respect any article you read because, you know, there's a lot of time and work behind it. But yeah, so from an early point in my career, that's something I've been interested in is just, as an athlete, I was always hurt. So if I can help someone early before they're hurt, I just think that's the coolest thing you can possibly do. So I'm really, really working hard with a bunch of people now to continue that and evolve it. And I think every year it changes based on what you see. So pretty exciting stuff that we're working on and hopefully implementing here more and more each year, and open for good results.
How long did it actually take from when you guys actually submitted it to it being published? How long ago was that?
Oh, let's see. Going through all the IRB and stuff, that took forever. But publishing it, I think we had to revise it 3 or 4 times. So it was probably upwards of 6 months.
Wow.
And then it just came out, and we saw it mentioned in a reference in another study already. And
that's cool.
Yeah, so it's a cool process. It's not my thing, I'll be completely honest. You know, in residency, that's one of the requirements is participating in research. Mm-hmm. And I did it again there and got my paper out, and I don't think it's my career calling, that's for sure, but I do, it's really important. I totally support it. If I can ever be involved in it, I will, but, you know, to have to write it and edit it and do all that, you know, it's a lot of work. So I really respect people who do that on a daily basis.
All right, I want to take a 60-second break. When we come back, I want to talk about residencies and fellowships, since you've gone through both of those things. And I also want to talk about the Save the Bear weekend and what that means at Geneseo University.
It's time for the PT Final Exam Pop Quiz. Keeping you on your game before and after the NPTE. Here's today's question.
How many attempts are allowed on the NPTE? How many times are you allowed to take this killer exam?
We'll be right back with the answer of today's PT Final Exam Pop Quiz.
The PT Pinecast proudly supports the Wounded Warrior Project. Since 2003, the Wounded Warrior Project has been raising funds and awareness for the needs of injured service members, helping injured servicemen and women with aid and assistance, and to provide unique direct programs and services to meet their needs. Their continuing goal is to foster the most successful, well-adjusted generation of wounded service members in our nation's history. To find out how you can help the Wounded Warrior Project, visit them online at woundedwarriorproject.org.
Humanity's greatest advances are not in its discoveries, but in how those discoveries are applied to reduce inequity.
Doing what's never been done before is intellectually seductive.
We all need to contribute. Me, you, we. It is our duty.
With international service learning, travel to a new part of the world, learn the skills to help others, and serve those in need. Visit ISLonline.org for more.
Okay, here's today's PT Final Exam Pop Quiz one more time.
How many attempts are allowed on the NPTE? How many times are you allowed to take this killer exam?
And the answer to the PT Final Exam Pop Quiz is...
You are given a 6-attempt lifetime limit. This means that you cannot take the test more than 6 times in your life.
Thanks for playing along at home, boys and girls. Remember, for your NPTE test prep, all you need is the PT Final Exam. Find them online at ptfinalexam.com/pintcast. Working out his orbicularis oris until failure. DJ, please. Jimmy McKay on the PT Pintcast.
All right, we're back on the PT Pintcast talking today to Sean Bardinet, along with the Chicago White Sox organization, a PT in baseball, a graduate of Geneseo State University, and that's in the State University of New York system. That's where you got your bachelor's degree in biology.
Yep, up in Rochester, New York.
And this was a big weekend. See, one of my closest cousins went to Geneseo, and there was the big Free the Bear weekend. Are you familiar with the weekend? Is it kind of hazy back in undergrad?
You know, I have to be honest, I spent most of my time studying in libraries, so if it was at all away from that, I'm just kidding. I'm familiar with it. So
the story is there's a fountain in the middle of the town of Geneseo, and it's got a bear on top of it holding onto to a pole. And the legend is, if a virgin ever graduates from Geneseo University, the bear will just get off of that statue and walk away, never to be seen again. As of recently, the bear is still there on top of the fountain. So the Free the Bear weekend, its tradition is still intact.
I think you just educated me on a couple things I wasn't aware of. So
I was up there for one of those weekends, and I said, you know what? We got to keep this damn bear around. I will do my duty. I'll do my best.
They might have been pulling your leg. I'm not sure on that one.
All right. So you went through residency and you went through fellowship. And this is a topic that comes up a lot amongst PT students and I think fresh PTs, PTs who've been out for a couple of years. When did you start thinking about doing a residency and a fellowship, and how'd you kind of follow that path?
Probably somewhere between my first and second year, probably all the way through my first year, more towards my second. One of our professors was residency trained, and she was really big on promoting it, actually. She kind of talked about her experiences, how much she learned. I think the way she described it was she gained 3 to 5 years experience in 1 year. I'm sure you've heard something like that. And when I heard that, it was like, whoa, this is something powerful. And for me, it was, I kind of knew what I wanted to do going into school. Pro, college sports, that was kind of it. Maybe I was a little closed-minded. I didn't really give other things a chance, I guess. To this day, that's still really what I'm passionate about, and I'm glad I followed it. But I didn't feel like I really became an expert at sports, dealing with athletes in just, you know, your PT program, because you have to get such a wide range of skills. You have to treat neuro, geriatrics, pediatrics. It's like, you know, a little bit of everything, but I didn't feel like I was great at one thing, which I wanted to be. So I didn't feel like I would really be doing my athletes justice coming right out of school and trying to work at a higher level with, you know, those college guys and up. So residency for me was kind of a no-brainer, I guess. I was looking at the opportunities you had in these programs, and it was, you're on the field, you're working with college professional level athletes, and that was the quickest way I could see to get to that, because, you know, just taking a regular clinic job around the area, I didn't know where I could go that I could get that experience. And don't get me wrong, I think there probably are places you can, if you have a great clinical and you latch on with some good people and that door opens for you, by all means, I think that's great. I just, for me, that didn't come to fruition. So residency was the choice for me, and I really have nothing but great things to say about it. I'd strongly encourage it.
I like how you answered that. You know, you said that you didn't think you'd be doing the athletes that you worked with justice just coming out of school like this. It was about you getting that knowledge, but it was about what you'd be able to do with it and who you'd be able to affect with it as the reason to do in the residency. I kind of like that answer.
You know, you hear a lot of fake it till you make it, and that always kind of just bothered me. It's because this is a person, this is their career, their life, something that's important to them. And I had a hard time sleeping at night when I wake up to this day and write things down on my phone when I think of, oh, I should have probably mobilized that joint or look at this article because it relates to that. It's probably not a very good quality, but it's something that kind of haunts me and I guess keeps me pushing forward. But
that's the kind of PT I'd want to see, to be honest with you. That's the kind of PT that I'd want working on me, somebody who's thinking about it.
Yeah, and I think for the most part, a lot of us are like that. That's why we're in this, is we really want to help people and help them in an efficient and the best way we can. And for me, I didn't feel like I was there yet. So I started looking into these programs and I loved what they had to offer. You know, you do research, you're working with athletes, you're teaching in some of them, things that I was really passionate about. And it was, like I said, a no-brainer. I was excited. I wish I could have done multiple residencies because just one wasn't enough for me. So I guess that's kind of why I went on and did a fellowship following.
Is that the progression then when you knew? So your fellowship was an upper extremity athlete / baseball fellowship through Proaxis Therapy, which is now ATI, and the Kansas City Royals. I mean, you kind of had that thought in your head that it was going to be baseball and that's a pro level. So that's got to be the natural progression of going from a residency to a fellowship, right?
I did. That was the bridge for me. I came out of residency, you know, getting ready for my SCS and thinking I knew a lot of stuff, and I had just learned so much information overload of the things I really wanted to learn, which PT school is great. You learn so much about everything, but this was learning about sports medicine, which I really wanted to learn more about, and I did. Actually, funny story, I applied to as many professional teams as I could. I had an interview with one, a baseball team, and you know, the guy asked me some questions. And I was dumbfounded. I didn't have answers. I was fumbling. I realized, holy cow, I may have these clinical skills, but I haven't been with a team. I don't have that experience. I'm not ready. It was a really embarrassing moment for me on the phone interview with him. And I actually saw him at winter meetings and I went up to him, introduced myself in person and thanked him. I was like, you know, you were honest with me. You gave me good feedback and made me realize that I wasn't ready. So I saw this opportunity, the fellowship, training under some really great people. You worked down with Stedman Hawkins, Dr. Hawkins down in South Carolina, trained under a couple really big PhDs, Chuck Thigpen, Alan Shanley out there as well, who are, you know, they're doing a lot of research. And I just tried to surround myself with smarter people. I think that's kind of been the trend in my career, is be around people who are smarter than you, listen more than you talk and soak it in. And that's what the fellowship opportunity was for me. And then the second half of that fellowship was with the Kansas City Royals. So that's where I really got the hands-on experience with the team, learning, because baseball is a unique sport. It has its traditions and it's things like that that you don't know from a book, or you only know being a part of it and treating those guys and being in that locker room, the clubhouse. And I can't say enough good things about the Royals guys for taking me under their wing and teaching me as much as possible. And I learned so much in that entire fellowship, on top of learning so much in a residency. It's, if you can do it, I had to take kind of a, you know, you make sacrifices, and I'm lucky at that point in my life I could do those things. I understand, you know, all people can't. I really was fortunate to take advantage of those opportunities, but they were both incredible experiences, each in their own way, kind of taking me from a entry-level PT, so to speak, just out of school, to what I hope is, you know, kind of refining my skills every year the farther I go.
Yeah, I liked what you just said there about making sure you surround yourself with really smart people, and you start to, you're going to learn that way. And I'm going to give you a compliment, because when John and I were talking a couple of weeks ago, he said, I got this guy, Sean, he should be on the show. He works with baseball players. And our first couple of email responses back and forth, you were just being really humble. Like, I don't know that I have anything to add. You kept saying, I don't really know that I have anything to add. And I think that you were kind of just being a little too humble, because you do, you have all this experience you've done, not necessarily just the schooling, but you've been out there and you've been doing it. And I think that how long you've been practicing isn't necessarily as important of the things that you've taken in and paid attention to. So I think that a lot of people will hear this interview and say, I did learn something. So you were being super humble, man.
Appreciate that. I think, you know, looking at the list of people you've interviewed, I mean, kudos to you guys. You guys are killing it. Some huge names. And I listened to a couple of them. I'm like, holy cow. And then I talked to Sue and she's like, yeah, I'm on there next month. I'm like, geez, this is unbelievable. So congrats to you guys. But I think maybe I can relate to some of the younger audience that I don't have 20 years experience. I don't pretend to. I'm kind of new and fresh and young and full of ideas and energetic. And I've been lucky to be around people who are far smarter than me. And I've tried to listen as much as I can to them and pick and pull things I like from their styles and integrate it into my own. And that's kind of where I'm at and still moving forward with that.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what this podcast does. I mean, obviously I'm on the youngest end possible, having not graduated yet. And like you said, the list of people that we've had on the show is pretty remarkable, but it just comes from me asking nicely and all these great minds in PT say, yeah, absolutely. So it kind of shows the two ends of the PT spectrum is that the young end really, really wants to learn and are respectful of all the people who've been around so long. And people who've been around for a while, they're super excited to share anything they know with everybody they can. So it's kind of this like Woodstocky love fest going on with just sharing information, but it's cool. We learn stuff and we have a couple beers.
It's really cool. And it's really exciting. I think as a student, as a young professional, I've reached out to a lot of people that I don't even know, emailing them, going up to them at CSM, different conferences, just introducing yourself. I'm not really that outgoing person usually. So at first it took me a little bit to do it, but I'm so glad I have, because the majority, it's all just great people in this profession. They're more than willing to help you out, send emails, this is advice. And the cool thing is I'm starting to get a couple people emailing me now. And I promise you, if anyone emails me, I will never say no, because I annoyed so many people who helped me to get there. So not that I'm there or anything, you know, to sound like that, but it's cool to start to transition into hopefully helping some other people, but still taking advantage of learning from as many people as I can who are really, really sharp people.
All right, so I finished 8th out of 10 in my fantasy baseball league last year. I got I got a good draft position this year because of my crappy finish last year. Who should I pick up? Who's going to be the sleeper? Who should I pick up in like the 10th or 11th round? Who am I going to get?
That's a good question. First of all, I'm impressed that you play fantasy baseball. A lot of people do not, but it takes a diehard to stick with it for that many games.
I'm not good at it. I just play it.
The Royals were really solid. Great group of guys. The White Sox are acquiring some new talent, so I have to stay loyal to those two organizations. I know Alex Gordon's out there as a free agent. You might want to look into him. He's a super nice guy who's one of the hardest workers I've ever been around. So not enough good things to say about him. That's for sure. He's a great guy.
All right. So every episode is a pint, but before we're done with a pint, we do shots. We do the parting shots. So any pieces of advice you'd want to give to somebody starting out who's looking to go into something with college or professional sports, how to get there, or just a piece of information they want to keep kind of in the back of their head?
Yeah, I think when you're first, you know, you're looking at that first job, whether it be a residency or going into the workforce, is don't be that person that's looking for the higher salary. Maybe take that pay cut a little bit for an opportunity that has more continuing ed, or being around people who are doing research and involved with up and coming things and really passionate about their craft, because that's totally going to rub off you and the environment you're in. So I don't mean to put pressure on you, but I think that first job is an important one, and kind of prioritizing what's right. We all just paid a lot of money for our education. Don't start skimping now and trying to make a little bit more. You know, it's worth the sacrifice. It definitely is, just to be in a really positive environment where you can grow. I think that's investing in yourself and doing that is the biggest piece of advice I can give.
I've heard similar sentiments from other people, and I think it is important because it's so easy to get enticed. I mean, I'm coming up on about, you know, 7 months to go before I graduate, and a lot of people are starting to talk about what maybe offers they're getting in terms of money. But if you're not loving where you are and you're not growing, man, that's a miserable place to go to 5 or 6 days a week.
For sure. And you know, some of the best advice I ever got is, if you're passionate about what you're doing, you're going to be successful. It might take a little bit longer, but like you said, you're doing it 5, 6, some of us 7 days a week. You really got to love what you do, because it can wear you out. And if you're not really fired up about it, then it just becomes a job. And that is my goal, for that never to become just a job. It's got to be something I love, and you know, something that wakes me up at night because I care that much, I guess.
That's a good sign. That's a sign of somebody I'd want working on me if you were my PT. Well, he's headed out back to another season now with the Chicago White Sox organization. Want to check in with you again, maybe during the season, see if we can get some mid-season information out of you and see how things are going for you with the new organization.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be great. Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Sean Barnett, thanks for dropping by the PT Pintcast, man. We'll talk again.
All right. Have a good one.
Follow us on Twitter at PT Pintcast and online at PTPintcast.com. It's like TMZ, except with way more important information. And no Miley Cyrus. Okay, it's not like TMZ at all. The PT Pintcast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.